Chris Kershaw tipping pitches. CJ, how does the hitter see that and take advantage?
Well, first and foremost, Chris, if it did happen, it always happens when the pitcher is in the stretch. Rarely can you pick up pitches when a guy is thrown from the windup, and that's what we saw in that seventh inning.
Raise your hand if you spent your offseason trying to get fatter.
Honestly, I did.
Yeah, it's like I went into hibernation over the winter. I'm no longer in school, and I'm just carbing up. Yeah. Me, you, and Joey Votto.
Yeah, apparently he told reporters at spring training this past week, he said, "I tried to get fatter." This is when he arrived for his physical. He said, "I succeeded at that, apparently. We did all the testing, and I am fatter." I just wanted to take as much time away as I could and relax and really unwind. I felt like I needed it. Hopefully it pays off.
He plays the game so uptight. He's like so tightly wound that he's like, "I just needed to relax, man. I just needed to have some comfort food. I ate mac and cheese like every day, basically. And I feel like he earned it."
The thing is, like, he is arguably the loosest player out on the ball field, you know? Like, I feel like he's so relaxed out there. When you see him up at bat, he's just like chilling there. I don't know. He has a very nice, relaxed swing. A lot of guys are like really uptight, lots of movements, you know, and he's just like, "Nah, man, like just walk me."
Yeah, that's fair. I like how Joey Votto has like earned the ability to just say these things at spring training and not have people question him. He's been so good for so long, and he's so good at like he's so good at the baseball that the athleticism and the weight, it's like not really that much of a concern.
Look at the face at the top, his face at the top of this article. He's like, "Are you going to question me? Are you going to question me getting
fatter?" I'm Joey Votto. You know how many meatballs I ate during this offseason? By the way, I am Bobby Wagner.
And I'm Alex Baisley.
And this is Tipping Pitches.
Thanks for tuning in, y'all.
A little bit later in the episode, we have another really great interview. We've been so lucky recently with the people who have said yes to come on our Stupid Little Baseball podcast. Later, we're going to be talking to Mina Kimes, who is an awesome person, an awesome writer, and we talked to her about an awesome story that she wrote a couple of years ago about bat flips in Korea, and then just some other fun things, including our favorite dogs and dog breeds. So stay tuned for that. But before, we have a couple transactional things to get to. The cold stove got a little hot this week, huh?
Yeah, it did. Some stuff finally happened. Dominoes fell.
It still doesn't really feel that exciting. The dominoes that fell were like Eric Hosmer, who I put number one on my most punchable faces list. So tell me what happened.
So the Padres kind of, I mean, this has been, I don't know, I feel like this news has been floating around for months, right? Yeah. We teased it on the last episode a little bit, but the Padres went out and got Hosmer.
There's an old joke that Jalen and Jacoby do on their radio show where they say alert and then they say broken news instead of breaking news. Like, this was broken news, like basically 6 months ago.
Yeah. 8 years, $144 million.
Opt out after the fifth year, front-loaded contract.
Yes, super front-loaded contract. How you feel?
This doesn't really move the needle at all for me. Yeah. Eric Hosmer was really good last year. I think we were looking at that before the show, and he was worth a little over four wins on FanGraphs. And so I think they wanted to sign him for the quote-unquote intangibles. I mean, he played every game last year. He is, all the reporting bears out that he's a leader in the clubhouse, whatever that means. I don't know. It's sort of symbolic to the fans. Like, we mean business. We'll open up the checkbooks, and we want this rebuild to enter its next phase. I don't know if he's, like, baseball-wise going to really change their projections all that much, but it's sort of like, remember when the Nats signed Jason Wirth and it was like, we're going to actually sign someone and the young prospects are going to come up at the same time. And obviously they had some better young prospects like Bryce Harper and Steven Strasburg. But it was like, we're going to sign a veteran who has proven that he can win in other places. And that feels like what this was to me. And so, I mean, I don't hate it. It's better that people are being signed than not being signed, even though I'm not particularly a fan of Eric Hosmer.
Yeah. So it's super front loaded, which means that when the Padres are ready for contention in whenever
they
you
won't
think
have
that
2017
is,
Jason Wirth.
Yeah. It's like, so if you think that they're 4 or 5 years away or less than that, even, they will still have Hosmer, but they're not paying him, you know, $30 million a year at that point. So Yeah, unless he decides to opt out, in which case they're paying him nothing. But yeah, I agree with you in that it's kind of symbolic to the fans and be like, you know, we're not just going to they had three Rule 5 draft picks on their roster last year, which is kind of wild.
The Marlins might break that.
Yeah, honestly. They were rostering a guy who had like never played above single A, which honestly I kind of respect that. It's like, why not, man?
Just give these dudes shots. Just give them a chance.
So I think it's fine. Like, the Royals like offered him 5 years, $100 million, and he said no to that. So maybe he just wanted that change of scenery too. That L.A. weather.
That San Diego weather.
Yeah.
That's even better.
That L.A. weather. Southern California weather. I feel like Hosmer fits in a lot better there than like Kansas City.
Where is he from?
He's from Miami.
That makes so much sense.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, shout out to him, I guess. Shout out to the Royals, I guess. And actually, though, I do want to mention, real shout out to him, not even a sarcastic shout out to him. He's going to be wearing number 30 in honor of Yordano Ventura, his former teammate who passed away, I believe, last year or before last season or before the season before that. I can't remember. But yeah, that's a cool move on his part. I find it easier to like him now that he's not on the Royals and I don't have to picture the 2015 World Series every time I look at him. So good for him.
Yeah, you can just kind of ignore him as he's like dwelling in the cellar of the NL West.
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, that brings us to the next move, which was J.D. Martinez to the Red Sox, or as Zach Cram from The Ringer put it, discount Giancarlo Stanton to the Red Sox. We were talking about it on the way over here, but I have literally not thought of the Red Sox since they were eliminated from the playoffs last year, basically. other than the couple rumors that J.D. Martinez would sign with the Red Sox and negotiations sort of coming to a halt, and I guess that didn't really stop them, but I feel like all we've talked about this offseason is the Yankees, and Brian Cashman has done a great job of stealing the narrative of the offseason and making it feel like the Yankees were just the best team in the league last year and they just came up short against the Astros, or the best team in the AL East at least. And I don't know, Dave Dombrowski's kind of like, listen, we have money also, and we've won a lot of times also. Not 27 times, but enough times in the last two or so decades where we can sign J.D. Martinez for a lot of money, even though it's a little bit of a discount.
Yeah, 5 years, $110 million. I mean, from the Red Sox perspective, you can't be upset by that, right?
Nope.
Like, he is the best hitter on the market. He had an insane year last year.
Yeah.
And he even missed, I think, like 20 games.
And hit like 40-something home runs, right?
Yeah, I think if he'd played the whole season, he would have challenged for 50, which is kind of wild to think about.
Juiced ball.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, the Red Sox are going to be good.
That's our analysis. They're a good baseball team. They're going to be good again. They didn't lose Chris Sale, and they didn't lose Mookie Betts, and Rafael Devers maybe will go through a bit of a sophomore slump, but he's also great.
I did see some takes on Twitter by some people who I follow who were saying, these are ostensibly people who I like enjoy following, but they were like, oh, see, the free agent signed. It was Boris's fault that they were just holding out this long. There's no problem. See, this offseason was just normal like any other offseason. Now we can go back to thinking about the season ahead. And it's like,
this is like when winter rolls around and climate deniers are like, see what happened to global warming?
It's so true.
The season has to start. I mean, it was going to start either way. That's not what we've been saying this whole time. We weren't saying that just the baseball was going to end.
Yeah, it's really dumb.
The MLB just disbands. That's what they were expecting. That's what they think we thought was going to happen.
Yeah. Bad take if you think that everything is just fine now that free agents are actually signing. Like, they were probably going to sign at some point. You can't be like, oh, well, it's June and J.D. Martinez finally signed. Back to normal, everyone.
Pen to paper just fixes everything. I just want to say really quickly, J.D. Martinez is now the best-looking player on the Red Sox, potentially the best-looking player in the AL East, and I don't know how that makes Yankees fans feel, but it makes me happy.
Yeah, although Andrew Benintendi's pretty cute.
This is just this is turning into a gossip hour.
Yeah, honestly, so is Mookie Betts. I love him.
Yeah, that's fair. You know who's kind of scary is Chris Sale.
Yeah.
I would not mess with him. I'm sure he's a nice guy, like, off the field, but, you know, there was the whole uniforms thing, and then
But wow, I forgot about that.
Yeah, when he just cut up the uniform, he took a pair of scissors.
He's like, nope, not wearing this. Sorry.
Yeah, F you guys.
Yeah.
I'm the franchise. There's a, from Zach Cram's Ringer piece, there's a graph that says, it's titled Best Qualified Hitters 2014 through 17. It's just a list of highest WRC+. And JD Martinez is tied for fourth with Bryce Harper since 2014.
Yeah, that's
wild. Not even like he had a hot year last year. He's just one of the best hitters.
Yeah. Another Rule 5 guy, too, who the Astros let go. I don't remember who I was reading, but someone was like, see, even the Astros don't get everything right. It's like, that's kind of good to know.
when he was wasting away on Detroit last year, I was like, he wasn't even on my radar at all. So much so that I had pretty much just forgotten what he looked like and forgotten what it looked like for him to play baseball, because it had been so long since I watched him play in a meaningful game for the Tigers, and he was just wasting away there.
Yeah.
And so when they traded him, I think when they traded him to the Diamondbacks, it sort of set all of this in motion.
Yeah.
It's like he had a great year for a team that was overperforming, and maybe not overperforming, but that did something in the playoffs, and he is awesome.
Yeah, JD Martinez is like OG flyball revolution guy.
Yeah.
Swing changer back in like 2013 or something.
Yeah, him and
like
Josh
that.
Donaldson.
Yeah.
And Daniel Murphy.
And Daniel Murphy.
Yeah. This is sad.
All right, we've been talking about good teams in the AL East. Now, let's transition to talk about a bad team in the AL East. Tampa Bay Rays. Can I just ask you what they're doing?
Yeah.
Because I don't know.
What are you doing, dude? It's like, they're just getting rid of everyone on their team. They don't want to have a team anymore. That's fine. Send their team somewhere else.
They DFA'd Corey Dickerson. All-star last year, posted 2.5 wins, has been a solid, if not great, major league hitter over the last couple seasons. Good pop in the bat, gets on base at a fine clip. But they were just like, nah, $6 million, that's too much for us. We're going to DFA you.
That's breaking the bank.
Jesus, man.
For a multi-million dollar, potentially billion-dollar organization. Okay. Yeah. They also traded Steven Souza Jr., who was their best player last year, basically, and was worth 3.7 WAR. And you know what they got back? Second baseman prospect Nick Solik and pitcher Anthony Benda, and two players to be named later for the Diamondbacks.
I love the player to be named
player
later.
Player to be named later.
That should have been the name of the podcast. Podcast to be named later.
It's a little wordy, though.
P-T-B-N-L.
It's the same abbreviation of player to be named. You thought about that for, like, aggressively long. We've been talking a lot about the Marlins organization kind of acting in bad faith, and the Rays were like, yo, you thought one Florida organization was acting in bad faith. Let's just trade away all of our players because we don't want to pay low salaries for them.
Yeah.
Who's going to be on their team next year?
Brad Miller?
Chris Archer?
Yeah, Chris Archer. Not for long, probably. He'll probably be gone by the deadline.
I think he would have been traded last year had he had a better year.
Kevin Kiermaier, who's like their best player now. And the other thing they did was they traded Jake Odorizzi to the Twins for like a single-A shortstop. Okay, sure. Jake Odorizzi, who's like a fine pitcher, has been an average pitcher over the last few years.
You know what they always say? A major league average starter is worth a single A shortstop who might never see the big leagues.
That's true.
That's a 1-to-1 comparison. Tale as old as time. It's like yin and yang.
I mean, it's like,
bad times, man. Yeah. Bad hang in Florida. That's rough.
Like, I don't necessarily disagree with, like, the idea of you have to try and compete every year, you know? Like, it's fine if you think, hey, we're out of contention for the next few years. We're going to retool some things. But it seems like they're just kind of, it's not even a retool. It's just, like, we don't want to pay these guys, so we'll take on, you know, your minor league contracts for our major league contracts, no matter what the return is. And it's like, come on, y'all. That's not even tanking. That's just, like, yeah, bad faith.
Oh, well.
No, speaking of tanking, Rob Manfred says he doesn't like that term.
He doesn't like the tanking term.
He doesn't like the term tanking.
What should we call it? Should we call it rebuilding? Although Derek Jeter doesn't like that term. He prefers building. We're not rebuilding. We're just building. There was nothing there in the first place. It was just empty land. We're just building on it. It feels like real estate developers who just build like the biggest gentrification buildings you could possibly imagine. They're just like, we didn't knock down what was here before. We're just building on empty land that we just found. We just walked onto it, and we just sat down in the middle and claimed it was ours. What did Manfred say that he prefers?
I don't know. He said he doesn't like. He just said he doesn't like to describe that as what's happening, and that this is a cyclical sport. It's like, dude, you okayed the Marlins' existence right now.
Cyclical sport. Tell that to Padres fans, or to Rays fans, or to Marlins fans. Although I guess they had a little bit of a cycle in 2003, but they've been cyclically terrible since then.
Yeah.
Bad to the worst team to bad.
I'm looking at this SB Nation article and people are like throwing out their alternate terms to tanking. Selective non-competitiveness. Strategically misplacing wins. Losing with benefits.
That's great. Twitter is undefeated.
Yeah.
Speaking of things Rob Manfred doesn't like. Mound visits.
Oh, God.
So he floated the idea that they're going to limit mound visits to 6, right? And everything after that, instead of a fine, instead of, I don't know, like an ejection of the manager or whatever, they're going to force a pitching change after you've visited the mound, like after you've crossed the threshold of how many times you're allowed to, which doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Because if you visit the mound and you have to change pitchers, you're just taking more time. This is all supposed to be in the name of pace of play. And if you have to change pitchers and there's no one in the bullpen warming up, that's going to take a much longer time than just a mound visit to clear up signs.
Yeah. It's strange because that's not in the rule book that you have to change pitchers. Manfred just like said that to reporters yesterday and was like, so they were like, so what's the penalty? And he's like, automatic pitching change.
That'll show him.
Like, I think up until then, it was just like umpires are going to be like, no, you can't visit the mound.
What if the manager just does?
Which is also just straight. Like, you see him, like, sprinting out of there, and the umpire's like...
tackles him?
That would honestly be a lot more entertaining. I don't know what Manfred is thinking.
Yeah, forget pace of play. Now we have, like, a linebacker running over the middle. Now it's just football. This would make for some insane manager meltdowns if they just got ejected for trying to, like, meet with their pitcher.
Yeah, seriously.
Do you remember that, like... Well, all the Bobby Cox meltdowns. But do you remember that Braves manager, like, a decade ago that used the rosin bag as, like, a grenade and, like, threw it up in the air? We'd get some of those.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen that video, go YouTube it right now.
That's the thing about replay review is that we don't get any of those good, like, manager confrontations anymore. Because, like, they review it and you're just like, okay, I guess I agree with it.
Who are you going to get mad at? You're just going to yell in the general direction of New York? The caucus or wherever they review the plays now?
Write an angry letter to them? Like,
send an email from your iPad that you're not allowed to have in the dugout anymore?
Yeah.
So Cubs catcher Wilson Contreras said, I don't even care regarding the mound visits and the new rule. He is not happy about it. He said, I don't even care. If I have to go talk to the pitcher again and pay the price for my team, I will, which is awesome. But I don't think that Wilson Contreras can just afford to pay all of these. Like, he's not the highest paid player in the MLB. He can't just be like, if he's going to catch every game and he just wants to visit the mound all the time, he can't just be paying $50,000 a game or whatever it might be.
Yeah. All this to say, this is dumb. I mean, you pointed out that to the casual fan, mound visits might be annoying, and that's fine. But if you're going to do this, I would love to see some progress on the things that literally everyone hates, which is, as we've said before, replay review.
Yeah, long replays. Not everyone hates replay review. I will say that, though. We just do, and we say that on the podcast all the time, and we think it's stupid. But everyone hates long replay reviews. So why don't we just start with the things that everyone can agree are stupid, which is 10-minute replay reviews when you should just be able to make a bang-bang decision. It should just be limited to how long. It should just be limited to like 30 seconds. Or a minute. Everyone can wait 30 seconds or a minute. They can just scroll to the top of their Twitter. They can see that two people like their tweets. They can get a little rush of dopamine, and then they can look back up at the screen and be like, all right, we're ready to play baseball again.
Yeah. Yeah. It's dumb.
Rob Manfred, we have made our feelings clear on him as commissioner. Okay. Is there anything else we need to get to before our interview with Mina?
Real quick, before we get to that, Sam Miller... We're the Sam Miller Beat podcast. We just talk about everything that he writes about. We should have him on, honestly, yeah. One of these days.
We just continually like refresh his author profile page on ESPN.com.
Like his biggest readership at this point.
We get alerts for all his tweets. Sam, come on the pod.
He wrote an article titled, Put Me in Coach, How Much Embarrassment Would You Be Willing to Endure to Play Major League Baseball?
Do you think you wrote that headline? I don't think you wrote that headline.
Probably not. But the premise is you get paid whatever salary you're getting right now, and you get the option of just playing Major League Baseball for however long you want.
So like instead of being like an accountant or a lawyer or a journalist or whatever you are, you just get to be a baseball player for the salary that you currently make in your current job.
Yeah. And you have to actually play. You have to start the game at any position. And his little other quirk is that you can't leave the game under any condition.
You like break your leg, you have to stay in the game.
I love the way he puts this. He's like, all you have to do is get to the park 5 hours early, hang out awkwardly in a clubhouse where the players all try to avoid acknowledging you. Your presence is actually quite shameful to them. Feebly take batting practice in front of those same major leaguers where a uniform looks wrong on you. Strike out 3 or 4 times against a major league pitcher in a game that counts. Run to left field 9 times and stand there while strangers yell weird insults in a melted gummy mess to you. Yada, yada, yada. It goes on.
I think I could only last a year.
I would do a year.
I don't think I could, because if you did a full year, you could at least write about it. If you did it like part of a year, people would be like, all right, you couldn't even last a whole year in the MLB being embarrassed.
Yeah, it was like,
but doing 2 years? Oh, God.
Yeah, there's no way.
All right, well, that was a fun article. Go read it. We'll link to it in the description. And when we come back, me and Kimes.
Moments and cloudy days on my snap. Mysterious aberration illuminated the trap. My telephone calcation synonymous with the sunrise. Mountains against the foreground forever me coming back.
All right, so another guest, Alex. We have been lucky to have some great ones in the last few weeks or so. Today we have Mina Kimes, who is a senior writer over at ESPN.com and for the magazine, and also appears on Around the Horn and some other programs, right, Mina?
That's right, yeah. Hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Thanks for coming on.
I'm good. I'm excited to talk about bat flips.
Are you excited that the football season is over, or a little bit more sad, or are you still catching up on sleep?
I am. Well, it's NBA All-Star Weekend, so I'm definitely not catching up on sleep.
Yeah,
but
fair.
I do always enjoy, you know, NFL is my primary beat, and I'm always happy the few weeks when it's over, but then I get really, I'm a big draft person and I get hyped for that pretty quickly.
Mm. So it never ends, does it?
It really, really never. I feel like baseball is the only sport now with a true off season.
Yeah. And this season was like the deadest of dead.
Yeah. You can go into hibernation totally for a few months and not really miss anything.
Yes. Well, I'm a Mariners fan, so sometimes I like hibernating from baseball.
Yeah.
I'm excited it's back. Although I just saw that Erasmo Ramirez, I think, has a strained lat, which, like, of course he does. At this point, I'm numb to Mariners injuries, but not great for my Seattle baseball team.
It starts already. I'm a Mets fan, so, like, being numb to injuries, that rings a bell for me, too.
Yes, especially pitchers.
We wanted to talk a little bit about that Korean bat flip story, which you mentioned real quick. Because we both enjoyed it a lot, not only just the incredible reporting and the writing that went into it, but also we loved the design and just everything about it.
It was
just
gorgeous.
It was the entire package of it. So just in kind of a general sense, what was the genesis of that story, the idea for it, and then the decision to really go all in and go to Korea to report it? How did that start, and what made you so interested in this idea of the dichotomy of bat flips between America and Korea?
Yeah, so it was actually born out of a discussion between the artist, director, journalist, all around wonderful genius person, Mickey Dusage, who I worked with, between him and some of our design folks. Actually, they were talking about these great bat flips and how fun they were to watch it from Korea, that were kind of, we were getting videos and GIFs, and Mickey was like, man, I just want to draw these, right? Because they're just awesome, and animate them. I'm Korean. I'm half Korean, and I went to Korea the prior year and did a story on a League of Legends player. So, being the resident Korean, some folks in the magazine asked me, "Do you think there's a story here?" You know, and you know, I was like, "Well, you know, this is fun. It's cool. It's interesting. Let me dig around a little bit." So I started asking some folks in Korea about, you know, well, why is this so normalized here? Why is it not stigmatized? It just kind of hoping to see if there was something interesting. And what I found and what sort of triggered my interest was that people didn't really want to talk about it. You know, there was actually a little bit of tension when I brought it up and saying, and also nobody seemed to know the answers to my question. So I had two big questions. One, why is this common? Two, how did it all start? And I decided, you know what, I have to go there and find out. So I'm very lucky to work at a place that agreed. And Mickey and I decided to embark on a journey together to try to kind of find answers, not only find answers to these questions, but figure out whether there was a story in those answers.
You have this really great quote in the Batflip piece from this guy named Kerry Marr, who like leads cheers at games, where he says the MLB is like opera and KBO is like rock and roll. And I really like that framing, in part because it speaks to a level of fan engagement that the KBO has that the MLB has been trying to reach, but it just has not really gotten.
And trying so hard.
Trying so hard, yeah. And you write that that's something that really developed recently, just in the early 2000s, that the KBO started to create its own identity and start to attract younger fans. And so, especially with the MLB kind of trying to make a similar shift, do you think that there are, similar shifts that could take place over here, traditions that would translate over very well? Or is it just too different and rigid of a culture over here?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's funny, right after this piece came out, around the time, I remember MLB put out a compilation of bat flips, right? The league. And I thought was very indicative of what you're saying, which is the league, they want to be fun. They want to have joy and stars and internet moments. A lot of the resistance is actually coming internally from players who are enforcing the right way, quote unquote, right way and all that. It's not like the NFL where it's the league cracking down on it, actually, which I think is very interesting about baseball. It has these challenges that are very inherent to the game. And that's not just fun. That's the nature of the sport. It isn't basketball. It isn't a constant highlight reel. Like, there are parts of it that aren't really designed for the internet age. So I think it's a big challenge. I do think it would serve them to embrace a lot of the things that KBO has done. And that's not just bat flips. That's, as you mentioned, it's the game experience is so fun and it's so rowdy and raucous and enjoyable. And I don't know how that translates to America, but if they were able to capture some of it, I think it would help a lot.
Yeah, it's almost like a college environment, like a student section, rowdy, drunk, and it's almost like the difference between going to an NFL game and just sitting in like the regular stands versus going to like a Penn State college football game and sitting in the student section and being crazy.
And everyone knows the cheers. It's so cool. All the players all have their own song and dance, and like everyone knows it. It's an absolute blast.
Yeah, it's definitely on my bucket list to go over there and like catch a couple of games one of these days.
Just try to get like a grant or something and just get us sent over there. Yeah. Well, I just wanted to shift gears a little bit and just talk about more some general sports journalism-y stuff. You started out mostly writing and stuff. You were doing some business writing, started doing some sports writing. And then in the last couple of years or so, or even like the last 18 months or so, you've gone from, primarily doing writing and stuff to doing a lot more TV and a lot of podcast appearances. Great podcasts like this one, Tipping Pitches.
This is the
peak. This is the mountaintop. No, but kidding aside, how has it been to try to like go from like this multi-platform come up that you've kind of been on and just to kind of like shift gears and be in different modes depending on what medium you're in? And is that something that you always envisioned yourself doing, or is it just something that's kind of come and you've just kind of taken it on the fly?
Yeah, no, is the first answer. I didn't. I mean, I was an investigative journalist for a long time before I started writing about sports. I did very serious stories. And most of my TV experience was going on and talking about those stories and being very serious and not making jokes at all, which sort of ran counter to my personality, which is not serious at all. So, I was able to kind of have fun with that on social media. But then when I joined ESPN, I started getting opportunities to, engage in commentary, which allows more room for voice, obviously. And we have a lot of fun, lighthearted stuff on our network, so it's not just television features and serious stuff. It's a totally different skill set, a totally different part of my job, but I find there are a lot of parallels in that it involves curiosity, the same thing that made me want to go to Korea and find out why they were not wanting to answer my questions about backflips. It is the same thing I think I try to bring to every topic I encounter when I'm on television. And so it's different. It's not for everyone, but I feel like for me, it allows me to kind of tap into the same parts of my personality that made me love being a reporter as well.
Right.
Speaking of around the horn, there was a video in early December that surfaced on Twitter of you on set with a very, say, emphatic reaction to the news that Ohtani
would not,
a sincere reaction that Shohei Ohtani would not, in fact, be a Seattle Mariner. Can you just talk a bit about what was going through your mind? And is this emblematic of what it's like to be a Mariners fan? Did we get just a peek inside the world?
It's not, because as I joked earlier, I thought I was, you think you're numb, right? So I was born, so NFL is my main sport. I'm Seattle sports, Seahawks. I have like a Seahawks Super Bowl tattoo. I'm like a nut. The Mariners are my first love. Yeah, I think most kids love, at least maybe of my generation, baseball comes first because it's kind of easier to understand, or I don't know. I also happened to grow up at a time when the Mariners were awesome. Okay. And some of the stars, I mean, Ken Griffey Jr., Alex Rodriguez, like it was insane. And Edgar Martinez is my favorite player of all time. Got to see him play a bunch whenever we go to Seattle and go to the Kingdom. So that's my heart. Okay. So, but for the last 15, now 16 years, it's not been fun most of the time to be a Mariners fan. And so you don't stop caring. I never stop caring, but I'm not as invested and my expectations aren't as high. I think that, and then something like this happens and you just get drawn in and you allow yourself to build up your hopes. And so then you all got to have the fun experience of watching those hopes crush in real time.
So fun.
Yeah,
I mean, he really seemed like he was gonna. Everyone was saying it was a sure thing that morning, and no, it was not.
That's when like the alert starts to go off for me as a Mets fan. Was like when everyone is saying it's a sure thing. Like after the 2015 World Series, everyone was like, "The Mets have the best odds to get back and win next year." I was like, that was when the alarm started to go off for me. I was like, "There's no way." Now everyone's saying it. Everyone's like, "We're not. It's not us against the world." And so that's when the alarm started going off for me.
It's very interesting to me how being a fan of a certain team and not only the culture of that team, but their record of success sort of conditions you to think about things differently. Like, you know, being a Mariners fan, I think about baseball differently from how I think about football as a Seahawks fan, given their success recently and the way I react to news, and my expectations are just completely different. Like I really don't expect much, and I don't expect much out of them this season, but I'm still reading the news and I still saw the Erasmo Ramirez thing, and it's hard to go away.
I'm an A's fan, and so it feels like the three of us, we have like A's, Mariners, and Mets, and we'd make a good team at like the Sympathy Olympics or something.
You guys, because if there was a Yankees fan in here, we wouldn't be able to relate to him at all.
Yeah, no, yeah. It sounds like a line of a joke, right? Like an A's fan, a Mariners fan, and a Mets fan walk into a bar and like don't leave till the morning.
Yes, completely, yes, and nothing good happens from there.
All right. Well, the other thing that we wanted to talk about real quick, I know we're running short on time, so we'll do almost like a speed round. But we know that you have a deep love for dogs, as do we, as have many of the guests that have been on this podcast before. We've talked about dogs a weird amount for a podcast about baseball.
Strong correlation there.
Not enough, I think.
I agree. Yes, we should actually just pivot to dogs.
Yep.
Just podcast about dogs. So in the vein of All Fantasy Everything, their podcast, I don't know if you listen to it or if any of our listeners do, but we just wanted to do a quick, maybe a one or two round draft of our favorite kinds of dogs and give like a one sentence explanation since we're so short on time. So
time it deserves.
Yes, absolutely. Let's give it its limelight.
So how many roster spots do we have to fill in this one?
I'd say since we're short on time, I'd say we'll just do like two maybe each. Yeah.
Let's do three. I'm going to make time for this.
Okay. All right, great. So let's do three. So since you are generous enough to be our guest today, we will give you the first pick in the draft. And then Alex and I will quick do a rock, paper, scissors shoot over here while you take your pick and are on the clock.
Okay. And this is like just general good dogness, right? This isn't like an athletic thing. We're not drafting these dogs for any purpose other than to be good boys.
Yes, excellent. Exactly. Yes. No, not the puppy bowl. You know, we're not racing, nothing like that. It's just, you want your squad rolling with you down the street, and these are the dogs that are coming with you.
Well, and it was sparked. It was sparked actually by our good friend Tim Tebow, who did his own dog rankings over, I guess, on
SB
on
Nation.
SB Nation.
Yeah.
Do you remember what his rankings were? I'm curious.
He went with the Rhodesian Ridgeback was his top one, I believe.
Odd. Okay.
He's Tim Tebow. It kind of looks like him. So you know, people end up looking like their dogs after a while. So I can see it for him.
100%. I look exactly in my mind.
Have the first pick, and you're on the clock, and you can take any amount of time that you need.
Okay. This is a biased pick. This is like the thing that where the guy in Moneyball like drafts the guy because he has a hot girlfriend or whatever. This is me being that guy and not listening to my analytics or my head, but going with my heart. And I'm going to go with a dog that is the closest appearance to my own dog, who is a mutt, and that's the Beagle.
Ooh, excellent choice. Yeah, choice. I love the Beagle.
I gotta take that one off my board now.
So cute.
Alex, you wanna go next?
I will go next. I'm gonna go with the Golden Retriever on this one.
And classic.
It's a classic. And really all I can say about this is it's hard to overstate the impact of the movie Air Bud on my childhood. That's really all I can say. I don't actually own a dog, but you know, one of these days.
One of these days, you'll have a companion. Yes, a boy should dream. Yes. And I feel like growing up and dreaming about having a dog, if you've never had one, like Air Bud and Golden Retriever is definitely the way. All right, for me, I'm going to go with Husky right off the bat because growing up, my family is a huge dog family, and we used to go to like the AKC dog show in Philadelphia at the convention center, and I always just thought that they were magnificent and beautiful, so I would read a bunch of books about them. And then because of my love for Huskies, it just turned and morphed into a love for wolves. And so I want a Husky because they're like kind of, they're beautiful and super athletic and amazing, but they're also like independent and weird and moody, which is, I feel like I'm independent and weird and moody. And if I had a dog, it would just kind of balance me out because I would get mad at it. And then I'd be like, I'm probably acting this way too. So it'd be a check on myself.
Like that. Yeah, that's a good one. I'm a Washington Huskies fan. That's my college team. So always loved Huskies, had a lot of stuffed Huskies growing up. Okay, I've got for my second pick, I've got another Homer pick. You might not know about this dog, so this is pretty hipster of me.
Sleeper pick.
So I am half Korean, and the national dog of Korea is the Korean Jindo. That's J-I-N-D-O. Kind of looks like a Shiba Inu, just very smart. It kind of looks like a Spitz, too. Are you guys Googling? You
see yeah. It's almost like a Shiba Inu Akita crossover.
Yes, completely. Just great smile, very intelligent, loyal, just all around good draft pick, I think.
Excellent choice. I love it. Alex?
Well, actually, speaking of Shiba Inus, my next pick was going to be the Shiba Inu. And
there's a little story behind this one.
Yeah, the story behind this is that back in our days at the college paper, we were talking about like what dogs would you be? And Bobby made the guess. He was like, to me, he was like, Alex, I think you're a Shiba Inu. And then I went online and, you know, obviously.
Are you Asian?
I'm not.
Okay. That's super racist if you were. Yeah.
All right, no, it's on. More in, it's more in personality. He's very independent, like keeps his head up all the time. He's even keeled.
Okay. I would say that's like when there's like a white basketball player and everyone's like, he reminds me of Larry Bird, and you're like, that's nothing. He's like,
yeah, the Ringer NBA show did they compared Luka Doncic to Larry Bird last week, and I was like, okay. Whoa, okay.
Yeah, I mean you gotta do the cross racial comps when you're doing sports, because otherwise yeah. But okay, you're not Asian, so that's cool. Shiba Inu, legit.
And I did go online and take the BuzzFeed quiz, and in fact, the dog that I am is a Shiba Inu. So it's pretty much set in stone at this point.
Sounds scientific.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was very scientific. You saw that story a little bit short because I made everyone on the staff take the quiz. I was like, we're going to stop production for an hour and everyone just take this quiz real quick.
Funny. All right, we got one round, right?
Yeah, well, I have one more in the second round, and then we got one more. We'll do a speed one for the third one. I am going to also do a hipster pick. I'm glad you started that trend so I wasn't the first person to do it. I'm going to go with the Brussels Griffon, which
love those.
Yes, I have one at home, and she's not like a purebred or anything. She's a rescue. But she is the most charismatic. She's not as energetic in her older days because she unfortunately has diabetes now, so she's very sleepy all the time. However, back in her younger days, she was very moody, energetic, and she only responds to food, as many dogs do, but she is like, it's literally all she cares about in the world is food and chasing squirrels in the backyard. And I just feel like if I was walking down the street, having an army of Brussels Griffons around me would be just like the most boss move you could possibly think of. So I think I'm going to go with the Brussels Griffon as a homer pick and also as a hipster pick.
I love it. I love that you were like, it was adopted to let us know you're a good person, not a bad person.
Yes. Rescue your dogs.
They're so adorable. I love them. They look like Ewoks, little Ewok man. They have like little beards.
Yeah, so many people. When my dad has a really nice car, so he goes to car shows a lot. And he brings her along, and so many people are like, is that an Ewok from Star Wars? Or is like, what is that thing? Is that a gremlin? It's funny.
I love it. All right, my final pick, I'm going to go populist here, but also, like, I think this dog is underappreciated. And it's the dog that's basically every dog in LA is part this dog, and that is the Chihuahua.
Because,
nice.
I mean, small dogs get so much judgment, like, oh, like, it's not a real dog. And you know what? Dogs, you know, like, they're the Jose Altuve's of dog. Like, they can do stuff, too. Like, give them some appreciation. Give them some love. And Chihuahuas are very sweet, loyal, bright dogs. So, I love them.
I love that. I love that comparison. Just, like, small, a lot of pop, a lot of energy and personality. Yeah.
Chihuahua for me.
Excellent choice. Alex, final pick.
All right, last pick. I'm going to go with my backup that I had for the Beagle in case the Beagle didn't get chosen.
He's got like a draft board over here. He's got like grades.
I'm not kidding, man. and I'm going to go with the English Springer Spaniel. I love the floppy ears and the beautiful, like sleek brown and white coat. Beautiful dog. Yeah, that's what I'm going to go with.
Elegance.
That's a good pick. I'm frustrated that you chose that because I feel like you had an inclination that I was going to go with the English Cocker Spaniel because that's my other dog. I have two dogs back at home. But in order to not be redundant, I'll go with a Bernese Mountain Dog because big, fluffy, thick. I feel like we haven't done too many big, thick dogs so far. Yeah. And the Bernese Mountain Dog is just, it starts out as like a teddy bear when they're puppies, and then it just grows into this massive companion. And I think they're gorgeous and strong and powerful and loving, and they have the most beautiful coat in the world. And so I'm going to go with the Bernese Mountain Dog. I'm like judging it like I'm at the dog show because I just, this is what I've been ingrained with.
Very scientific. And I feel like we got a really good diversity of dogs.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. So to wrap up, why don't you just tell us a little bit about Lenny and then we'll just finish up real quick.
Well, Lenny's sitting on my lap right now. And
excellent.
So I had to go Beagle first because I didn't want him to, you know, look at me askance the rest of the day.
To revolt.
He is a mutt and a very mixed mutt. So he has a lot of interesting traits. Adopt, don't shop if you're listening. Adopted dogs are the best. They're also psychotic. My dog is crazy, but I love him so much. And yeah, I mean, I think dogs are the best sports is how I'd like to conclude.
I love it. All right, Mina, thank you so much for the time. We really appreciate it. We know we ran a little bit over, but it was for the love of dogs. So
you had me when you started the dog draft. Thank you for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Mina. But you just can't give up now. You gotta save yourself. Yeah, I gotta hang on, baby. The sun will come out. Nothing good ever comes easy. I know times are rough, but winners don't quit, so don't you give up. The sun will come. All right, well, that was amazing, as have our last few guests been. Thanks so much to Mina for taking the time to talk to us and to like put effort into the dog draft, which I was worried was going to be a dumb idea, but ended up being really fun. Yeah, it was really, I really enjoyed that. And she played along great, which is awesome because most of the stuff we talk about is just weird ideas.
Also, she's way funnier than us, as have all of our guests been. Yeah. So like we just should, as I said last time, let's just end the podcast now so people don't realize that we're not as cool as we seem when we're interviewing cool people.
We need her to teach us like how to be so eloquent on air.
Yeah, she just speaks in like minute and a half like paragraphs and they're just beautiful and she doesn't say or like the yeah. So thanks y'all for listening. Please subscribe, rate us on iTunes if you feel strongly enough to do that. Share it with a friend. You can reach out to us at tippingpitchespod@gmail.com or you can slide into our DMs on Twitter. Really anything, we're open to all comments, critiques, concerns, questions.
Yeah, give us listener questions.
Yeah, we love those. Thanks if you listened. Thanks to Mina, and we'll see you next week.
Yeah, thanks y'all.